You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is Mraz. Today's show was fuller than me after an NFL Sunday. Enjoy the takes and laughs in the best of the DA show.
We did a lot on James Harden's comments yesterday because 2 nights ago, Harden basically gave up on the Rockets. Harden had clearly tanked it, trying to get out of town, trying to shoot his way out of town. For the first time in his Rockets career, he went 4 consecutive games scoring 20 points or less. He had shown up to camp, shown up to the season, very overweight, dare I say, puffy. And 2 nights ago saying, we're just not good enough. This team's not good enough. We don't have the pieces, yada, yada, yada. And yesterday, I talked about how unprofessional I thought it was from James Harden. I understand in today's NFL, in today's NBA, that the players can work where they want to go when they want to go there through agents and front offices and owners, etc. Harden's not the first star to get star treatment. He won't be the last star to get star treatment, and he's been a scoring champ 3 consecutive seasons. So the guy is a potential future Hall of Famer. He's an MVP. He gets star treatment. I get that. I am totally fine in the NBA or any other sport where the elite players get treated differently. What I'm not cool with is showing up to work and the rest of your guys balling out and you try to play a slug because you don't want to be there. I don't like that. And to hear some of his teammates like John Wall and Boogie Cousins talk about James Harden, you can see the lack of respect they had for him. I mean, John Wall's been there for like 6 minutes. And already he's like, look, you've actually got to try to just kind of wave everybody off already. That's not fair. And if we're not all pulling in the same direction, it's obviously going to be bad, and you're not pulling in the same direction, and so it is bad. So his teammates didn't have respect for him, and that's where I lose respect for James Harden as well. But for the Brooklyn Nets, they saw something different. They didn't see a guy that was going to sink their team. They saw the final piece of the puzzle for their team to win a championship, trading away Caris LeVert, Jarrett Allen in a 4-team mega deal, and 3 first-round draft picks. So they just flat-out don't have a first-round draft pick in these 3 years, 22, 24, 26. And 4 first-round pick swaps, which means in those 4 years, the team that they traded with has the option to flip with the Brooklyn Nets if the Nets have a better first-round draft pick. The only reason the Nets didn't trade all of those first-rounders is because you're not allowed to do so. The owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers back in the early 80s didn't care about competitiveness, and so he just traded multiple first-rounders in a row, and they realized, this is a bad idea, and so the league just outlawed it. But so the Brooklyn Nets will have the worst of the 2 draft picks for whoever he traded to eventually in 4 of these years, and then the other 3, they just flat-out don't have a first-round draft pick. Talk about mortgaging your future. So young players traded, a total of 7 different first-round draft picks are traded in some way. And what you get in return is James Harden. This is one of the biggest bets in NBA history. It's one of the biggest risks in sports history. Either the Brooklyn Nets win a championship, or this looks utterly insane. And for a franchise that had just tried this with Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett a couple of years ago, and that obviously blew up in their face, the question is obviously, are the Nets insane for doing this trade? It is where we begin your cold open.
I love the city. I literally you know, I've done everything that I can. You know, I mean, this situation is crazy. You know, it's something that I don't think can be fixed. So, yeah, thanks.
I just feel like it's a way about, you know, handling business. He can feel however he wants to feel with the organization or whatever his current situation is. But the other 14 guys in the locker room have done nothing to him. So for us to be on the receiving end of some of the, you know, disrespectful comments and antics, it's completely unfair to us. Like I said, we've done nothing to him. We've only showed up to work just like everybody else and came in ready to work. So, like I said, it's completely unfair to the rest of the guys in the locker room.
He's going to do what he does best. And I think it'd be good for us, but I don't look at it as a restart. You know, it's just another juice of energy that we're going to get from, you know, him being on the floor and being part of this team.
Amazing, sensational, dramatic, Park Grundy.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
So that was James Harden's comments from two nights ago. That was DeMarcus Cousins ripping into James Harden, and then Jeff Green on the trade for James Harden. Here's my thought. I don't like this deal for the Nets. I don't like it. But I understand it, okay? And here's why. I don't like it because what I really liked was the Brooklyn Nets building brick by brick a positive winning culture that Sean Marks, the GM of the Nets, had come from San Antonio, inherited the worst situation arguably in the NBA with absolutely no assets, and built it with savviness and sophistication, brick by brick by brick, until he had dragged the organization out of dire situations and had made it once again an interesting roster, a young roster, an athletic roster, and they had assets. And then signing Kevin Durant and signing Kyrie Irving was the next step for them because they needed a star or stars to be competitive in a NBA Finals type of realm. But they didn't have to lose players to do that. Those were just signings. Those were just adding players. You're still keeping all of those young pieces you had brought in. You had to trade D'Angelo Russell because of redundancy at that position with Kyrie Irving. But ultimately, you are not losing guys you want to keep. This is blowing up everything you built. This is trading away and mortgaging the future and the present right now with all of those young pieces for one guy. So three first-rounders and four pick swaps and Jarrett Allen, who was a very good draft pick, and Caris LeVert, who had developed into a really good player, you had just traded away all of those pieces. And I don't like that because I think that you were so smart if you're the Brooklyn Nets in building it, and now all of that goes away. And it goes away for a guy that'll do that to the Rockets. It's traded away for that guy. It's traded away for that guy. A guy that has proven if he doesn't like his situation, is willing to actively tank his team. And that's why I don't like this. That's why I don't like this. Here's why I get it. I get it because the Brooklyn Nets have always been irrelevant. They were the New Jersey Nets as irrelevant and the Brooklyn Nets as irrelevant in the city. It is a Knicks town. It's been a Knicks town for decades, and to actually become the centerpiece of basketball discussion in the biggest media market in the United States, you have to win championships. You can't just be good or go to the playoffs or have a few good runs. You've got to win a championship. So that's the first part. The second part is James Harden gives the Brooklyn Nets three superstars. Gives them three superstars, and three superstars has been the key to winning championships in the LeBron era. LeBron obviously did that in Miami. LeBron obviously did that in Cleveland. The Golden State Warriors did that when they've won championships. And maybe the Lakers don't have a third superstar, but collecting the most talent around LeBron has obviously led to being a champion. This is what the Brooklyn Nets are trying to do. They're going, we've got Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, and now you add James Harden, and that's our three superstars, and that usually is a recipe for success in the NBA. So I get it there. But I don't like the addition of James Harden's attitude with Kyrie Irving's attitude, and I don't like taking away all those great young pieces and future draft picks that was supposed to sustain the success for the Brooklyn Nets. And betting on the attitudes and the focus and the commitment of KD, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving feels like the most dramatic risk you could possibly take. You know, it's different when you're betting on LeBron James and Anthony Davis, or LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh. Or even when you have a franchise that's won a championship with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond, and then you add Kevin Durant. Those feel like more understandable bets. But this, I mean, this is a scratch-off ticket where it's if you scratch off the four cherries, you win $700 million. If you don't, you lose your home. You scratching off that ticket? Are you buying that ticket? I don't like the deal, but I understand it. But it's the greatest risk in sports right now. And it's perhaps the greatest risk that we've seen to the NBA in many, many moons. I want to get your thoughts on this. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. And on Twitter, DA on CBS. I know you guys got thoughts on Twitter, DA on CBS. Our dictator himself, Sean Mraz, is a dyed-in-the-wool, lifelong Nets fan dating back to their New Jersey Nets days. And so I'm sure he has some very intense emotions about all of this. Mraz, I want to start here. When you heard the news yesterday, what did you feel?
Excitement. I definitely felt excitement because it's still, despite all the negativity, it's, wow, these are the Nets, and they really are all in. And I've sat back and watched big threes and all this other stuff, and it's my basketball team that gets to taste that for the next couple of years. This is exciting, even if it blows up.
Okay. Number two, what's the best part about this deal?
I think the best part about this deal is it protects against Kyrie's flightiness. So, in other words, basically, we expect Kyrie to come back, but the problem is you can't count on Kyrie week in and week out now, unfortunately, to be there for the team if he could walk away like this. And if Kevin Durant basically has a 2-3 year window before he could choose to leave again, like so many superstars are, well, you got to capitalize while Durant is here. And unfortunately, right now, Kyrie is your 1B star. Anything could go awry. He could simply walk away come the postseason or something like that, and this could all blow up in one of these couple runs that the Nets have. So I think the best part about this is no matter what happens with Kyrie, they're at least protected against his flightiness to have a 1B to go to Kevin Durant's 1A right now in the postseason.
Good point. What's the worst part about this deal?
The worst part about this deal to me is the draft picks, that you've basically punted on the next 8 years of draft picks, and if this blows up, and again it can, and Kevin Durant leaves, like we talked about last year. And I know Paul George has signed a contract extension, but when they make that move for Paul George, if Kawhi and Paul George were to leave, we said, well, what the heck are the Clippers left with? Doing this again like they did for Garnett and Pierce, and I think this is a much better deal than that one, but they were very fortunate enough to find the right GM and draft properly with the picks they had. Asking yourself to do that a second time is a lot to ask for. And obviously, I think the draft picks are the much bigger deal in knowing that if you don't win, you are going to be a dead and buried franchise once again.
So those that compare it to the Pierce and KG trade, that's unfair because those two guys were totally washed up.
Yep.
By the time they got those two guys, Paul Pierce was 35, Kevin Garnett was 37. And they were looking for those guys to be the culture, to be the winners. They had nothing around them. And clearly it wasn't, and they were too old to do it. So this is a better bet because you're bringing in a guy in his prime. I think Harden's 31 years old. But you just touched on something which makes this the craziest scratch-off ticket of all time, is that Kevin Durant can leave. Kyrie Irving may retire or just be completely combustible, which would leave you with just James Harden in 2 years and exactly what the Rockets are going through right now. And so at that point, if you're a mediocre team, is James Harden going to play this card again?
Yep.
And want to shoot his way out of town? And then you are left with absolutely nothing, a totally empty bag. Here's my question, Mraz. You have watched, observed, studied this franchise, this front office, and this GM since he took over the franchise. Do you think Sean Marks, left to his own devices, a San Antonio Spurs guy, wanted to do this or would have done this? Or is this because Kevin Durant pressured him to do it and he realized we're at the mercy of Kevin Durant because if we don't capitalize with KD, all of this is for naught?
I think you nailed it. Bingo. Bingo. If Sean Marks left to his own devices, I'm sure Sean Marks would prefer to hit some kind of big pick like the Spurs did with Kawhi Leonard later in the first round, hope they could develop him and build a team that way. But once you've signed Kevin Durant as your lead star, this is the NBA now. And that is something on the NBA. And I think as a general manager, you need to yield now and basically, within reason, bow down to anything to make sure that your superstar is happy and capitalize and win a championship, because that's what's most important. Not just making the playoffs or not making deep runs. Win a championship when you have this guy on your team and Kevin Durant. And unfortunately, those picks down the road aren't going to help you do that right now. James Harden is something that can help you do that, especially, as I touched on, if you can't trust Kyrie Irving right now.
I agree. I don't think Sean Marks does this unless Kevin Durant is pressing him to do it. I don't think Sean Marks is the type of guy, coming from the culture that he came from, that wants to trade away 8 years of draft picks. But I think he's caught in this crazy no-win situation. He can't upset Kevin Durant right now and not give Durant the pieces that Durant thinks he needs, because then signing Kevin Durant is a waste, because Kevin Durant is pressing the button of, I'm the superstar that you brought in, I'm the all-timer, and this is what I need. So it doesn't make any sense to sign Kevin Durant, not even have him play all of last season, have the clock ticking, and then not give him what he thinks he needs. Even if you don't think he needs it. I mean, that's the thing. You and I talked about this a lot last year when Kyrie Irving had the gall to say, we need more around here. And we're like, no, you've got Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. You don't need more. You need to be enough. You two need to be enough. But that only goes so far, because you can't war with your star players and say, no, you do it, because then they pull the James Harden and they emotionally check out, and then all of this is for naught. So you kind of have to.
Yes.
And that worries me about this, that I don't think Sean Marks wanted to really do this. He felt he had to do this.
I agree. But ultimately, Diaz, you see, this is the NBA now. And you have to bow down to these superstars. And you have to, when you have them, you have to capitalize. The Nets aren't the Lakers. This might be, the next 3 years might be the only shot as a Net fan I get to see my team win a championship. So they're doing all they can to do that. How do I not applaud that and be excited for that?
This weekend, Saints and Bucks divisional round playoffs. It's kind of crazy. We keep talking about how Tom Brady's 43, 43, 43, but Drew Brees is almost as old, and I don't think he gets nearly as much attention for how old he is. This week, tomorrow, in fact, he's going to turn 41, or turn 42, rather. So tomorrow is his birthday. He'll be 42. And so in this game, you'll have 43-year-old Tom Brady and 42-year-old Drew Brees. Is this notable? Hell yes, it's notable. And it is notable because Drew Brees has had the great misfortune to play in the shadows of more dynamic and, dare I say, greater quarterbacks his entire career. Drew Brees was not Tom Brady. He was not Peyton Manning. He was not Aaron Rodgers. He's not Patrick Mahomes. Those are four, arguably, of the greatest quarterbacks ever. You know, when there is NFL 150, you might see those four guys all on that Mount Rushmore or on that roster of NFL 150. And you won't see Drew Brees, because we didn't even see Drew Brees at NFL 100. 42 years old. He's still slinging it. 42 freaking years old. Remember that graphic last week during the Buccaneers and Washington game where they showed the graphic of the oldest players ever to throw a postseason touchdown? And it was Tom Brady and George Blanda at 43. And George Blanda looked like he was 73. That's the way 42 and 43-year-old quarterbacks used to look. I mean, by the time Montana hit 38 years old, it was no bueno anymore. It was rough to watch by the very end. Not that he was ineffective, but you just felt like he was so brittle that something was going to go wrong. And ultimately, he gets knocked out in Buffalo in a playoff game. And you say, okay, that's it. And he walks away. I mean, at one point, the greatest quarterback of all time hit 38 years old. And you just said, he can't do this much longer. These guys are 5 and 6 years older than that. So hell yeah, age is a storyline here. It's insane what both these guys are doing. It's insane. But it's also insane that this could be Drew Brees' last game. He's retiring after this season. I am absolutely convinced. So this is it. Is Tom Brady ultimately going to do what he has done to so many other quarterbacks? Beat them en route to a Super Bowl and send them home unceremoniously to where they then have to think about their fate. It may happen. Now, I like the Saints of this game. Obvious reason. Saints have beaten them twice in this season. It's on the road to the Superdome, and I think the Saints are a more balanced, better team. I think that the Buccaneers struggling with Washington, struggling, was a bad sign for taking on much better opponents, including the Saints. So I like New Orleans in this game. But is Brady versus Brees at this age a story? No doubt it is. That is reason to watch. If you're an NFL fan, you might just want to see Tom Brady. But knowing that these two guys are doing it this well at this age is a remarkable achievement. It is. I'll always respect both those guys for that. No doubt. On the phones, we're talking about this huge trade for James Harden by the Nets and if they're crazy to do it. Remy is in Ventura, California, here on CBS Sports Radio. Remy, what's up? Good morning.
Hey, what's up, DA, and you and Mraz? You guys are a kick in the butt, man. I really enjoy you.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, listen, no problem. Hey, what they did there is, to me, in my opinion, is they're just trying to see what that jerk with the mental problem, whatever he's up to see if he can cooperate with two of the best. 3-point shots, that's what they're going to rely on, those guys. But he's the guy, what's his name, that one I'm talking about?
Kyrie Irving.
Nobody knows. Yeah, Kyrie Irving. He's got a mental problem, man. Nobody knows what's up. And you know what I believe, 2DA, is that the mafia is involved in this.
Ooh. How so?
Yes, sir. However, I'm going to switch gears now.
No. Don't switch gears. I want this theory. How is the mafia involved?
I'm telling you, it's Brooklyn, New York, right?
Uh-huh.
And believe me, I'm old enough to know what the hell's going on between Chicago and New York back in the day.
Yeah.
Okay? It's just my theory. No biggie.
Well, what's the theory, though? How did the mafia pull this off? How do you think they have some influence?
For God's sakes, you know how quiet they can be and still get something done.
Okay, so you think the Brooklyn Mafia has a vested interest in the Brooklyn Nets and helped swing the trade by forcing Sean Marks to trade all those draft picks?
Oh, it could have been a nice discussion.
Okay. All right. So you think they might have intimidated Sean Marks into doing this?
And also, what's his name? Came from I'm losing my train of thought. That's a three-pointer. That's all he could do.
James Harden?
Listen. No, not Harden. But he He had a lot. He's got a lot of momentum. He is running. How do you coach your guys like that?
There's now, which guy are you talking about? Are you talking about Harden, Kevin Durant, or Kyrie Irving?
Kevin Durant. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Listen, you don't coach that guy. And he's telling the manager and the coach, Nash, is that his name?
Yes, Steve Nash.
Listen, he's like a puppet. He's going to go with what these gentlemen are going to say between Harden and Durant. Uh-huh. He can't stand up to guys that are disprofessional. Mm-hmm. You can't coach them because they know what they need to do to win.
I like it. Remy, I appreciate the phone call, brother. Thanks so much. I love the conspiracy theory as well, that the mafia might have leaned on Sean Marks to get this deal done. I would say that also Remy in Ventura, California sounded a lot like a wrestler. I'm going to turn to Pete the Body Bilotti, our resident wrestling aficionado. What wrestler did he sound like? Was that a macho man from Remy?
Slightly a macho man. I think he sounded like his own character, and it was a character in that.
Okay. So Remy could be his own WWE character.
And it, you know, sounded like something.
A kind sir, Andrew Bogish, is in for headlines. And Bogues, I don't know about what you think about the mafia theory there, but I did want just your straight thought on the trade. What do you think about the Nets mortgaging 8 draft picks or 7 draft picks for all of this?
Yeah, I can't fathom the logic of, we don't know where Kyrie Irving is or when he's coming back. You know what we should do? Trade for an unhappy, overweight guy. That seems like a thing that we should add to our table. So that's a real hard sell for me, but they're better than they were a couple of days ago, and I think their lack of depth problem is being blown out of proportion now. I think there's still enough guys around those three when they're all together, theoretically, to be a very useful team. And if the Sixers were the other team, and all of that was true, and Ben Simmons was up for grabs here, to keep Harden off another Eastern Conference team is also a win for the Nets here, too, because if he goes there, then that's a different road through the East for Brooklyn. So there's also a slight win in them keeping him from one of their competitors.
I don't like the trade, but I get it. Mraz likes the trade. Do you like it or dislike it?
I guess I don't like it because I think it's more likely to be the defining moment of the franchise for the next decade in a negative way than it is in a positive way. Because they really have 2 years now to win an NBA title. And even if everything goes okay for them, there's still LeBron on the other side that's good enough right now to prevent them from winning. So the window is really, really small right now. If the window was, you know, like 2 more years, if it's a 4-year window to get this done, I'd be a little more okay with it. But they've given themselves 2 seasons to get this done, and that's asking a lot, even in a perfect scenario of Harden and Durant and Irving meshing well together.
We're going to have a lot of discussion on this trade all morning long, especially from the Rocket side of things as well. But so to be fair, there was a point in time where I liked Chad Johnson / Ocho Cinco. I thought he brought fun. I thought he brought enthusiasm. And to a Bengals organization that obviously had been boring and bad for a long time, Chad Johnson clearly gave them some juice. And his sideline antics at one point in time were charming. They became less so as it wore on, and I thought that he became desperate. I thought he became desperate for attention. And I actually covered him when he was in New England at the very end, and I saw it there as well. It was, everything was so staged in terms of attention grabbing. Everything was supposed to be wacky Ocho Cinco. And it detracted from the football and his football career, and it made him more of a sideshow than anything. And I think since then, Ocho Cinco, who I like to call Ocho Stinko or No Ketcho Cinco, has felt more and more desperate for attention. But I will say that he can be very entertaining. Here is a clip of him arguing with Brandon Marshall on a podcast, I Am Athlete podcast. And on this podcast, they are arguing about being healthy players over the course of their career. Brandon Marshall did everything to be healthy, ate healthy, slept, hyperbaric chambers, all that type of stuff. Took his body as a temple to a very serious degree. Chad Johnson, a.k.a. Ocho Cinco, ate tons of McDonald's. And this is what they're arguing about. Listen to this audio and listen to how wild and crazy the argument gets between Ocho Cinco and Brandon Marshall.
If you were, your lifestyle, if you were eating better, and if you were sleeping better, matter. Just listen. Listen,
baby,
if you
what
were
time
eating,
do I go to bed?
Listen to me.
What time do I go to bed? Do I club? Do I drink?
You're eating McDonald's.
But this ain't telling me the fucking McDonald's
you're
is the reason.
McDonald's.
What is McDonald's in my career?
What are you talking about? Do you understand
all
the power of
listen,
food?
You're fucking brainwashed.
Do you understand?
You're
I'm brainwashed.
Yes, you're brainwashed.
This is science.
This is science.
Good carbs. Good. What are you talking about?
Science. You're fucking brainwashed by these people that are these made up ass shit. You believe supersize me? You believe in that shit too? No, it's
It's not about that.
Have you been hurt? Chad, hey, how many times you got hurt?
You know it's in... Never! Never!
How many times you been hurt?
Never!
Brandon, how many times
you been hurt? How many times
you
been hurt? What is that?
You butt no, but Chad, you butt no. You was lining up with your 40 grand of proteins a day, and you got hurt, and he was eating McDonald's and never got hurt.
Bruh, I played 13 years. Do you understand?
You got hurt.
Do you understand my
I
numbers?
I played 11.
Listen, let me tell you about science.
What? Tell me about science.
I had MCLs.
Why'd you get hurt?
I had high ankle sprains.
Why'd you get hurt?
I had a high ankle sprain. They said 6 weeks.
Why'd
and
you
I
get
came
hurt?
Back the next week and scored 3 touchdowns.
I never got hurt.
It don't matter.
Never.
I can't control if a dude hit me in my ankle. You was lucky.
What do you mean?
You was one of the ones that got
I
lucky.
Got hit in the head
so
every game.
If you're running across the middle of the field and somebody takes
that
your knee.
That happened all the time.
Somebody take your
it
knee.
It happened all the time.
And we were all stupider for hearing that clip. Brandon Marshall, Chad Ocho Cinco on the I Am Athlete podcast. Now, it finishes up with them really screaming at one another. And then finally, Brandon Marshall gets Chad Johnson to break. Ocho Cinco starts laughing and then tackles Brandon Marshall on the couch. So I guess it's all good. It definitely doesn't sound all good there, but it ends up, I guess, being all good. But could you imagine being Chad Ocho Cinco and launching into a tirade that because he ate McDonald's every day, it helped him stay healthier, and that Brandon Marshall eating well and taking care of his body was a mistake, and that's why he got hurt. That is what Ocho Cinco was arguing there. That had he just followed Ocho Cinco's all McDonald's all the time game plan, he would have been healthier and better, but he just got brainwashed into thinking that science worked. I mean, look, Mraz, I know you love fast food. I know you love yourself a good McDonald's hit, as do I. But the idea that a professional athlete would think that healthy food and healthy living is a mistake and right. being brainwashed is an all-timer.
Yeah. I mean, the idea that I ate fast food is probably the reason I never ended up in the NFL. So I'm the opposite, Chad Johnson.
Are you an Ocho Cinco fan, or did you find him annoying?
I think I'm with you. I liked him for a long time, and then I just got tired of him.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Let's start with LeBron James weighing in on the James Harden to the Nets franchise swap that could define the Nets franchise either in a good way or a bad way.
Trades and things happen every year. And, you know, for me, you know, my main focus on what we do here and how we continue to get better. And that was the case today. You know, the trades happened today, and I couldn't allow myself to kind of indulge in that, knowing that we had a team that we had to play tonight. So My main focus today was on the Thunder.
I mean, let's face it. The Brooklyn Nets did this with at least a little bit of LeBron James in mind. And I feel like every team that is trying to win an NBA championship over the last 10 years has to consider what LeBron James is doing. What does his team look like? But essentially, you're going to run into LeBron in one way or another. He makes the NBA Finals every year for a decade, so you're going through him. The only year that he didn't was when he was injured and the Lakers basically pulled the plug on their season. And if you're not running up against LeBron James in his conference, you are in the finals. So at some point, you've got to get through him. And for the Brooklyn Nets, they probably say, we've got to define ourselves by, can we beat the Lakers in the NBA Finals? Which is pretty insane, but that goes to show you what LeBron's legacy is. That the championship ran through him specifically between three teams for more than 10 years. Wherever he was, you had to measure yourself against. And I would think that LeBron says, okay, good, we got James Harden out of the West. But you probably still have to face them in the NBA Finals anyway, if both you end up being the two best teams of the NBA. Let me tell you, Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving, if he plays, versus AD and LeBron James of the NBA Finals. I'm here for that. New York versus LA. I'm here for that. Be awesome. Here's Jimmy Smith, Ravens cornerback, talking about this Ravens run and comparing it to their Super Bowl championship run of 8 years ago.
Hitting some adversity that year, dropping like four games in a row, then squeezing it in the playoffs and then making that run. It's similar. I'm not going to say it's the same. Nothing's the same. But it's very eerily similar to us hitting low adversity and then going on a hot streak and then being a wild card in the playoffs.
That was a great Ravens team that, as he mentioned, hit adversity late. That was a team that came oh so close to knocking off the Patriots in the previous year's AFC Championship game. That was the year that Joe Flacco in Foxborough threw the corner end zone pass to Lee Evans, I believe, and it was swatted out of his hands, and it would have been the go-ahead game-winning touchdown, and instead, incomplete pass, they line up for the game-tying field goal, and Billy Cundiff sent it like 70 yards the opposite way. No good. The Patriots survived. The next year, the Ravens were really good. They had a really good defense, and Joe Flacco was still a very good playoff quarterback at that point in time, and they had began the season 9-2, and then they lost four of their last five games. A lot of close ones, three one-score games, one in overtime. And people are thinking, well, they're 10-6, they've lost four of their last five, and they're collapsing into the playoffs. And that's when Flacco goes on that ridiculous hot streak. And he just runs roughshod through the playoffs, and they beat the Colts in the wild card round. Then they beat the Broncos, remember, in that crazy Jacoby Jones game in the divisional round. And then they go to Foxborough and exact revenge and actually dominate the Patriots in the second half. And then it's the blackout game at the Superdome in the Super Bowl against Colin Kaepernick, Jim Harbaugh in the Harbaugh Bowl in the Super Bowl. Crazy season, but that Ravens season was amazing, and what a run they went on. And there is a member of the team saying it kind of feels a little bit like that in Ravens land right now, because instead of them collapsing down the stretch, they actually collapsed in the middle of the season and got red hot at the end of the season and are still playing really good football and still alive. And finally, here's Craig Carton on WFAN in New York, who has Frank Isola, longtime New York Knicks writer and New York Daily News writer, and you've seen him on Around the Horn and other ESPN properties, who joined him to talk about, I think, this James Harden deal. And they bring up a celebrity soccer match that the Red Bulls put on a number of years ago, and Carton and I were on the same team in the celebrity game, and Frank Isola was on the opposite team. And early in this game, there's a long kick down the field. Isola is back there, and he's under it to grab it, and I come racing downfield, and I accidentally knock my knee into his and take him out. And Frank Isola is a pretty curmudgeonly type of guy, and he was unhappy. He did not play the rest of the day in the celebrity Red Bull soccer match. Here is Carton talking about it with Isola.
We warmed up together. You didn't play much.
Yeah, what's your guy's name?
Because Damon Amanda Laura gave you a knee to the thigh and knocked you out of the game like 2 minutes into the game. I'm looking around going, where's Isola? Oh, he's having a beer.
I couldn't believe. He hit me so hard, and I was telling my wife and kids, I said, I think this guy might have broken my leg. So they're all making fun of me. They're like, oh, you didn't break your leg. I went down because Ghana was playing the U.S. that day, so right. I went into wherever we were. And I basically got drunk because my leg was killing me so much. The next day, I was fine. So my kids were killing me again. Oh, you're such a wimp. You thought your leg was broken. But he did knock me out of the game.
He did knock you out of the game, yes. He was taking it very, very seriously because it's the first time in 25 years he was actually asked to do something athletically. So he's very excited about it.
So that is one of my more infamous moments. I mean, in a celebrity soccer game, I took out somebody with a rough slide tackle. And I felt so bad. I was like, Shep, I feel so bad. Because, number one, I've always really liked reading Isola's stuff. I think he really does a good job. And, of course, we're playing in a dopey celebrity game, and then I'm the one that took somebody out. Like, I did not want to be that guy. And Isola was so upset, so PO'd at me. And I kept trying to apologize, like, hey, man, I didn't mean that. I just was kind of running downfield, a little out of control. I ran into you. I'm sorry. And he did not want to hear it. And I felt so guilty because here he is on the sideline. By the way, they thought he tore his ACL. He's on the ground needing to be helped off. They thought that they needed a stretcher. This is a celebrity soccer game. And I'm like, I'm the guy. I'm the guy. This is, of course, I'm this guy. And not for nothing, but it's probably because I was still in shape and nobody else was. Like, these are all overweight fat guys playing in this thing, and I was the only guy running at full speed, and boom, nobody can get out of the way, and then suddenly I'm the guy. And I never wanted to be the guy there. I was just happy to be there. And so afterwards, after the game, we're in the luxury box, and there's kind of like this spread put out for people to eat and drink, and there's Isola icing his knee. Knee is elevated and his wife and kids are around, and I'm like, oh my god, they're gonna torch me. They hate me. They absolutely hate me. And I go over there sheepishly and I'm like, Frank, I'm so sorry. I did not mean to hurt you, obviously. And he is just like, get away from me. And his wife and his two kids, I'll never forget, look at me and they go, you're the guy that took out dad? You're the guy that took out Frank? I go, yeah, I'm so sorry. They go, that was awesome. That was great. And they start cheering me because they can't stand dad. And they're like, he's such a wimp. He's such a baby. And I was like, oh, thank God. I really thought that I was going to get his wife screaming bloody murder at me in the middle of this really nice charity event. So that was the day I took out Frank Isola by playing too hard. And that's your sound check. Mraz, embarrassing moment for the show or a proud moment for the show?
Well, I think it's a proud moment for the show because it shows a little grit and a little toughness, and I respect that out of you. What's embarrassing is I want to know what actual celebrities were in this game, because you've mentioned this is a celebrity game six times, and the whole event has come over you, Frank Isola, and Craig Carton. Was this a media game, or was this a celebrity game? Because it sounds like you're humble bragging.
No. You're absolutely right. I should not call this a celebrity game. This was a media game. I think Mark Erne was one of the goalies in this game.
Oh, so
you're absolutely right.
Of course he was.
No,
you're absolutely right. Celebrity game is the wrong definition. This was the media game.
Okay.
Yes, this is.
Because I had you tallied at six times as a celebrity game, and it felt like if I was saying that, boy, oh boy,
yeah,
the stakes would be out. And also,
this is not the celebrity rock and jock softball game before the MLB All-Star game, which like me and Little Bow Wow.
Exactly.
No, not at all.
Because if this incident took place between you three, I would love to know the other celebrities that were in this game.
That's a good point.
And I just have to say, maybe I've let off the loose reins. That was a very unnecessary fat guy you dropped in there.
Yeah.
Very unnecessary. Out of shape, maybe. But pointing a finger that you're some kind of, you know, perfectly athletic person who's all fat slobs running around. That's a little rough. Fat.
I mean, that was some apology. I feel bad that I hurt Frank, but he wasn't so fat. He could have got out of my way.
Basically.
I don't know what you just said.
Right. Basically, that's what he said.
Well, the game was being played largely in slow motion. Carton, by the way, was a very good soccer player growing up. He was a really, really good high school soccer player. And he still has juice, but even he always talked about on the air when he was on the air the first time how fat and out of shape he was. He always poked fun at that. I mean, it was a slow motion game. And I had just come out of playing rec league soccer like for a number of years. This was, you might remember, Mraz.
I remember.
Remember, this was the first 2 years we were on the air, two or three years. Since we were overnights, I would play in a rec soccer league at the Brooklyn Bridge Park before our show. And so they would be like 7 or 8 o'clock games. I'd go down there, and these were all guys that played or really played collegiate soccer and had no outlet. And so they played in this really competitive rec league. And I was the worst player by far. I always felt like I didn't belong, but I knew these guys. They played in the front office and the kind of like administrative work for the Red Bulls and like groundskeeper type guys. So they were just really, really like elite rec guys. And I was not. And so I played with these guys. And so I was just used to playing at like full speed. And then I get into this media game and everybody's playing at like one quarter speed because the first time they touched a soccer ball since like they were 20. And I just was going too fast. And I was reckless and out of control. And I ran down the field. And here's Isola. And I stuck my leg out. And I nearly ruptured his ACL. And you'll see Isola like co-host PTI. You know, he's a big deal. And every time I see him, I'm like, oh, my God, I nearly took him out in a freaking media game.
But that shows you. You invite us to play in something. We're going to be gritty, and we're going to be tough.
That's right.
Just like the show.
That's right.
My fat ass!
Rob tweets, how long before we get a Peter Schwartz tweet to the Nets and James Harden for an autographed basketball or a pair of shoes? Cigar City Capo tweets, Mothership Goons, DA against Frank Isola, Mraz against Mr. Six. Now, you spit in Mr. Six's face, but Mr. Six could have beat the crap out of you. So I don't know, were you a goon to him or did he intimidate you?
Again, he was fighting a teammate and I grabbed him because his teammates didn't grab him off. And then he went to attack me and I accidentally talked too loudly and spit came out of my mouth.
Accidentally talked too loudly. Is like that what I was Roberto Alomar said when.
Yeah, no, it was. It needs to be clarified because I'm getting a bad rap. I didn't cock back with a. We were screaming.
You didn't Bill Romanowski him?
No, and it built up, and yes, it landed on his face, and then it became an over dramatic moment. That being said, I could easily take Mr. Six. You could not take Frank Isola, DA. You're a twiggy.
I wouldn't want to fight Frank Isola. You're right. He probably has 40 pounds on me.
Oh, again with the fat remark.
No, I'm just saying that he's definitely heavier, so it's going to be hard for me to take down. But I am very confident that you would have been drilled into the ground and had seedlings planted on top of your dead body if Mr. Six really wanted to beat you up.
Look, all I know is I got the weight behind me. I'm not a fighter. I'm a lover.
Mr. Six, though, had probably a foot in height over you. And when he took off his jersey, he was shredded. He had more abs than the human anatomy should actually have. Giant pecs, huge biceps. He was ready to, like, do CrossFit.
Okay, so I understand that. I understand how chiseled he is. But every person has abs. It's just under how many layers of fat you have. So I have the same abs. I just have more weight to pack the punch. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take my chances on Mr. Six. I think Vegas wins as well.
Okay.
Remember the first call?
This is somehow going to...
Yeah, sorry. What did you say, AB?
I would say this is somehow, again, going to be like our fault that we're doing this, that we're pushing this. But you were the one unprovoked that said, I could take Mr. Six.
Right.
All smug and confident. You said that by yourself. And that's not even... You couldn't possibly beat him in a fight. And if he was listening, he'd be at your front door right now to show you that you couldn't win in a fight.
Yeah, we don't exchange addresses. It's like, it didn't happen.
Remember Remy in Ventura, California, who called up in the first hour of the show, and he insisted that part of this James Harden deal was because of the mafia, the Brooklyn mob, was behind this.
The mafia's involved in this.
Before you finish what you have to say,
allegedly.
I am in the process of editing the epic film. You just heard that drop. I think you thought Remy was some WWE guy. I think Remy has been a caller here under a different name before.
Well, I thought that he sounded a lot like Macho Man. Ooh, yeah.
The Mafia's involved in this.
Ooh.
That doesn't sound like Painkiller Pat to you?
Oh, give it to me again.
The Mafia's involved in this.
Ooh. Matt tweets in, was Remy from Ventura actually Painkiller Pat?
Mafia's involved in this.
Ooh. But I don't know if Matt is saying that because he thinks that it sounds like Painkiller Pat or because he thinks he's just out there on his own island like Painkiller Pat.
I didn't know he tweeted you that. That's why I need to shut my mouth and let you finish the bit, but I didn't know he tweeted you that. I'm pulling Painkiller Pat cuts right now. They're the same guy.
How many beers ago? Probably 1,000.
The Mafia's involved in this.
No, they're not the same.
Not
eight. No, age that voice over a lot of whiskey and cigarettes the last 6 years and tell me that that's not the same.
It actually would be like more like 8 years.
8 years, nonetheless, that is very similar.
How many beers ago? Probably 1,000.
The Mafia's involved in this.
In this.
But why would Painkiller Pat need to go Oscaring Kings Park? Why would he have to change his name?
Because he knew he wouldn't be able to get his point across. The moment we see Painkiller Pat, we're going to go back to the old bit when he calls in. Guy wanted to make a point.
Kevin tweets in, I love this freaking guy, Remy. You're going to trade those draft picks. Capiche? And he has a Sopranos gift that says, you know it and I know it, Paulie Walnuts. You're going to trade those draft picks, all right? Capiche?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Jeff tweets in, the Mafia is running the Brooklyn Nets. It all makes sense now. There's a gif of Tony Soprano, saying, what are you going to do?
Either one would work.
All right, standing by with our headline this morning is Andrew Bogish. Mr. Bogues, where do we begin?
DA, here we go in Jacksonville. The Jaguars and Urban Meyer said to be in advanced talks now about a marriage. They are meeting again today. The Chargers may be interested in Meyer, but that interest apparently not mutual at the moment. Elsewhere in the coaching front, the Lions expected to interview Titans OC Arthur Smith for a second time tomorrow. This one will be in person. Niners DC Robert Saleh met in person with the Jets, and then after that meeting went to the Eagles last night. And Chiefs rookie running back Clyde Edwards-Helaire returned to practice yesterday, but Andy Reid wouldn't talk about him facing the Browns on Sunday. Edwards-Helaire injured his ankle and hip back in Week 15. Hours after the James Harden trade, the Nets set a game to play. Only 9 players available at the Garden. 7 of them scored in double figures, led by Kevin Durant's 26. The Nets beat the Knicks 116-109. The trade, which also included the Pacers and the Cavaliers, still not official this morning. Houston, though, ends up with Victor Oladipo, 4 first-round picks, and the right to swap 4 others with Brooklyn. The Lakers, the first team to 10 wins this season.
LeBron dribbles between his legs several times, shoots a 3 over Roby, foul in a bucket. How about that? LeBron buries a 3. That's a 15-2 run for the Lakers in the last 3 minutes and 45 seconds. And the route is on.
LeBron watched that 3 go in. That was John Ireland on Lakers Radio. LeBron scored 26 in the 128-99 route of the Thunder. LA 10-3 overall, 7-0. On the road, Luka Doncic, 34 points, 13 rebounds, 9 assists, in the Mavs 104-93 win in Charlotte. The Blazers 132, the Kings 126, and the Clippers fought off the Pelicans 111-106. Zion didn't play after an inconclusive COVID test. Bill O'Brien is back. He's about to be Alabama's offensive coordinator. The deal so close to done that Nick Saban felt comfortable discussing O'Brien yesterday.
I've always tried to have the best knowledge and experience I can for our players and their development, and I certainly think he can contribute to that in a very positive way.
I do think before that there was a veiled jab at O'Brien being the Texans GM, that maybe that was not the best job for him in Saban's mind, but running his offense is all good. Saban said that before accepting the Bear Bryant Award as National Coach of the Year. On night one of the hockey season, the Stanley Cup champs from Tampa roughed up Chicago 5-1. The Leafs down the Canadiens in OT 5-4, and the Flyers dropped the Penguins 6-3. College poops, number 4 Texas, losing at home to number 15 Texas Tech, 79-77. And finally, some tennis news. Andy Murray has tested positive for COVID-19. That complicates traveling to Australia for the Open next month. There are charter flights leaving for Down Under later this week, and now Murray cannot be on one of them. And now, let's get eaten by lions. Woo-hoo!
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
So this all comes from an interview last week on Conan O'Brien's TBS show. Conan and Ricky Gervais were talking about death and the afterlife, and Gervais said he didn't want to be buried or cremated whenever he passes. He'd rather give back to the planet somehow, like letting lions at the London Zoo eat his corpse. He laughed about people at the zoo watching a naked 73-year-old body thrown into the pen and watching the lions tear it apart. But there was a serious thought in there, in that we take everything from the planet, including eating animals, so why not flip the tables a little bit on Ricky's way out? Now, this somehow got to the London Zoo, who respectfully declined his wish to be eaten by their lions. But they are struggling financially because of COVID, so they do welcome any donation that would help feed their lions, quote, in a more suitable diet. So if you want to see Ricky Gervais die and get eaten by lions, you can't get part B. You maybe get part A at some point, but there's going to be no lions, at least in London, eating a dead
Ricky
Gervais.
We don't really need the London Zoo here to the intermediary. We could just have Ricky Gervais's dead body out in the Serengeti somewhere, and there's just like a tour bus that goes by or somebody that films it or something like that. We don't really need them as the go-between. I also like that Ricky Gervais in this said the idea that the lion, they always start with the soft bits. And if the two lions went for my soft bits, they'd be in for a shock. See, they'd be about 3 feet apart, and it'd be like Lady and the Tramp. They'd be eating my soft bits, getting closer together. Now, I love calling it the soft bits. But I found it interesting that you mentioned 73 years old. 73 is not that old these days, and I don't know how old he is right now, but my guess is he's not older than in his mid-50s or something. So that means Ricky Gervais probably doesn't think he's got more than about 20 years left on this planet. Mraz, what do you think about 73 being a drop-dead date for Ricky Gervais? Too soon, or is that enough life for him?
No, I think it's too soon. I think, and it doesn't matter the health, you can make all the out-of-shape jokes you want. I think once you hit the 8-0, you're playing with house money.
The 8-0.
Yeah, if you get to 80, I think you satisfied and you understand, okay, you know, time has come. 73 to me is still too young with technology.
Ricky Gervais is 59 years old. Do we think, guys, that Ricky Gervais lasts more than 14 more years?
Yeah.
I take the over on 14 years.
I do, too. He seems still spry. Bogus is shaking his head. I think Bogus thinks he's gone in 14.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't think that he's... I don't think he's lived the healthiest of lives, so no. I think it's on the table here that the under is the right answer. I don't have the same confidence in over 73 that you guys have.
Really? So you take the under on 73 and Ricky Gervais?
I think I might, yeah.
Mraz, not to be morbid here, but what do you put your over-under at?
Probably 76.
So well, you're like, oh, come on. 73 is too early for Gervais, but for you.
Well, again, the magic number is 80, but I got to be realistic here that unless I get my act together soon, I'm going to have nobody to point to but myself. Now, the difference is I'm hoping to somehow hit Powerball at some point to have enough money to be frozen so I can be brought back to life when we figure out this technology.
That's the solution for you. Instead of dieting, the solution is to hit Powerball and be frozen.
I understand how unrealistic that sounds, but I truly believe
but do
we'll
you,
have that technology.
Do you? You always say that after you say unrealistic things, and I don't think you understand how unrealistic they are.
Well, hold on. People haven't been frozen, rich people, hoping that we come up with this technology?
Has it worked yet? Has anyone been unfrozen and cured of the disease
Bogus,
they were frozen with?
Because we haven't gotten there yet. If it happens 100 years from now and I've been in some kind of box, I'll pop back up for life. Maybe Taylor's got some great-grandkids I could play with at that point. Let's go.
So
why would you not want to come back?
Your plan is not to cut out sweets. It's to win Powerball, to be frozen, to come back to where in a future life it's easier to be healthy because of technology and science.
My initial plan is to cut out sweets, fast food, and all of that.
So this is your fallback.
My fallback hope. My hope.
Safety school.
My safe, yes, this is my Sunil West friend, my Duke. I understand that it's on me and I keep failing. The point is, if I happen to run into some money, this is something I would invest in as a good backup plan that I think would succeed, and it'd be great. I mean, I could be doing mornings for Frozen Chernoff in about 100 years. I think it'd be great.
From a real spaceship. Not a fake one. All right, so Mraz puts his over-under at 76. Bogush, what do you put yours at?
By the way, betting over
on Mraz is 76.
Yeah, thank you. That's nice.
I think 80 is a good number. I mean, I think that's a good place. That means my kids are grown up. They've had kids of their own. I've seen all of that. So, you know, I'll take 80 and or plus, sure.
Pete the Body, what are you putting your over-under at?
I would say 80. I would love to get to 80. I don't know if I'm going to get there, but I'm going to try.
Okay. Boy, I've got more optimism in myself than you guys do. I'm putting mine at like 92 and a half. My goal is to hit triple digits. I want to see 100. I have so much admiration for people that hit 100. I realize that's really difficult, but I think it can be done. But I think that 95 is also a tremendous accomplishment. So if I fall just short of that, that'd be, you know, a little bit less than what I would be desired. But you guys are all in your 70s and 80s. I'm still going to be kicking around doing, like, digital shorts for CBSSportsRadio.com.
Keep using that smoker, DA. See if 100 works.
I'll be smoking my dentures at that point.
Just DA and Connor Green coming up next.
Junior. Connor Green's kid.
Smoked oatmeal.
Still doing the Canadian bacon bit. DA's 99.
Yeah. Yep, it's DA, Connor Green Jr., and what Shep's kid going to be named?
Oh, Art. Has his girlfriend been let loose of being hostage yet?
Art Shepard.
Art.
Art. That's the morning show on CBS Sports Radio. Man. We're going to go out to the UK for a sixth division soccer team. Sixth division called Chorley FC. Now, when you are sixth division, that means basically you play a little soccer on the side on Tuesday nights in a beer league. I mean, that is barely an actual team, okay? But Chorley FC beat Derby County in the third round of their FA Cup on Saturday. And after the match, they got together, this Chorley FC from National League North, and started singing in the locker room. And they started singing in the locker room, Adele's Someone Like You. Now, this does not seem to be the normal, jovial type of post-winning celebratory song. Most of Adele's songs are really sad. She's an amazing, amazing singer with an amazing voice, but you wouldn't think of, oh, we just won this huge match, let's now sing Adele songs together. But the UK is different. Soccer songs and fight songs and battle cries are drinking songs and late night songs and chants, and it's great. It's just awesome and great when you're in the middle of it. Having a chance a couple of years ago to go to England and London and see multiple matches like at Liverpool and at Tottenham, and to hear the chanting and to hear the singing is just so cool to be part of in person. And even here stateside in the MLS, when a huge supporter section gets together and sings together, it's just awesome. So here is Chorley FC, guys, singing Adele's Someone Like You. Let's grade it.
Oh, friends, why are you so?
That is Chorley FC, 6th Division English Soccer, singing after a big match win of the FA Cup on Saturday. Now, for the scene, this video has been viewed over 8 million times. They are in this little locker room. They are standing on their stools. Half of them have no shirts on. Their jerseys are off. They're just in their soccer shorts. They're all hugging and singing and swaying along. It's a pretty amazing visual. And I would just love if, like, the Chiefs did this after beating the Browns this upcoming weekend. Wouldn't you love to see Tyreek Hill with Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce singing Adele after winning an AFC playoff game? I think it's awesome. Mraz, how would you grade out the singing there?
That's got to be an 8 out of 10. I'm getting a little choked up. I love Adele. And look, that song is so damn good. And it's so funny with singing and repeating songs, right? I think karaoke, for the most part, is terrible because it's somebody singing by themselves. Group sing-alongs and celebrations, to me, there's nothing more poetic and perfect about that. If you just have everybody having a good time and they're all singing in harmony together like that, that is great. I love that. I'm so into it. 8 out of 10, only because when they started clapping, they got a little offbeat and they started missing, and Adele was a little ahead of where they were, or they were a little ahead of where Adele is. Other than that, that was awesome.
Although the clapping is a little bit like getting your juices flowing, jumping up and down, getting into it.
You got to stay in rhythm, though, with the clap, D.A. You can't let the clap let you fall behind or ahead of where Adele's at.
Bogus, how would you grade it out?
I might even go 9 out of 10. I mean, all things considered, a group of dudes in the locker room post-win banging out Adele, and I mean, hit the end, that last part, that chorus where you got to be at your best, they rose to the occasion to close. They closed strong.
Yeah, I think it's a 9 out of 10 as well. I think, you know, it's not quite perfect, but it's pretty damn close. And I'm with you, Mraz. Like, if you've ever been, it's hard. We're not in these situations a lot here in the States. We don't oftentimes just like sing in unison, kind of like a cappella. But if you've ever been maybe at a wedding, at the end of a wedding, and you've played like you're playing the final song and people kind of get together.
Living on a prayer, big one.
Living on a prayer would be that would be one. But if you can get it also, and I don't think Adele was being played there. Like, they weren't singing with Adele, right? They were just singing on their own.
No, Adele, you could hear Adele underneath. That's how I picked up
could?
That they got ahead of it,
It's a great sound, and when you're in a soccer stadium and hear that type of sound, it's awesome. It's really awesome. Like I said, wouldn't you love to see if sports here stateside took up singing together and it wasn't like trap music or something like that? Wouldn't that be
beautiful.
Singing Adele after like the NBA finals?
It's beautiful. And the only thing I can compare it to is when you get a big Raptors game in the NHL playoffs, the Canadian anthem being sung in unison by everybody in the stadium who are Canadian fans. It's unbelievable. It actually warms my heart and it makes me just, you know, long for this pandemic being over. I'm going to grab 10 people together in a bar and just start singing some kind of Billy Joel together or something in happiness.
Although there is the dark side to this here stateside. Sweet Caroline. Bum, bum, bum. We all hate that one. That is our equivalent. That sucks.
But it does, because everybody just loves saying buh, buh, buh. It's not about the other words. It's everything. Buh, buh, buh. We get it. You can sing like a child. Enough. Neil Diamond sucks.
No, Neil Diamond sucks. It's the people that sing that song and have made it really annoying that suck.
Yeah, but he created it. Like, Neil Diamond and anybody that sings that song, you all suck. And then I get suckered in. I end up doing it too.
I think the point is that, like, an Adele song is so emotional that if you get together and sing together with it, there feels like something significant. When you sing Sweet Caroline, it's just like a dopey folk song.
Right. You're right, because there's passion behind Adele. And if you have the passion to sing that with others, you start weeping. I'm telling you, I got teared up. It's what a beautiful song. So beautiful.
When we come back, a guy that would never be arm-in-arm and singing Adele after the game, Jack Youngblood. He's going to join us coming up here next.
No one knows what analytics is. They think it's like a bunch of nerds doing math, which I don't know, maybe that's what it is.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
We asked you guys today, will this end up being a win for the Brooklyn Nets? Will they win an NBA championship with James Harden? Not a lot of faith. 88% of you said, no, it's going to blow up. Only 86%, rather. Only 14% of you said, yes, great move. This will work out for the Nets. Only 14%. So very few of you have faith in this deal. According to Front Office Sports, James Harden has acquired a 5% stake in the Houston Dynamo of the MLS. Awkward. Now he's a member of the Brooklyn Nets. He's going to have to look into investing in the Red Bulls or NYCFC. Mraz, let me read you a little snippet from a piece of the New York Times, which is a letter of recommendation from an author, Sam Anderson, called I Recommend Eating Chips. This is about eating a bag of chips.
Okay.
And this kind of like experience through space and time. Quote, for me, a bag of chips is a way to defeat time. It brings temporary infinity, a feeling that it will never end. A chip, a chip, a chip, another chip. The chips come like ocean waves, like human breaths, serial but unique, each part of a huge, eternal rhythm, but also its own precious discovery. Do you feel like when you open up a bag, he's eating Cool Ranch Doritos when he writes this, do you feel like eating a bag of chips is a way to defeat time?
In many ways, it is. That is really beautiful and true. And he is right. Every chip is unique in its own way, but it comes as a wave. And there was that discussion about me putting too many in my mouth at once. And I think it is. I think when you sit down and you open up that bag of chips, you could sit there and a half an hour has passed and you don't know how many you've eaten. And it's just something where you've munched on and your mind munches as well. That is really pretty and beautiful.
He goes on to write that he has almost finished the entire bag, and he says, the remaining chips are very small, just fragments, resplendent with flavor dust. I believe we have reached the point, though, where it would be shameful to leave only what's left. So we keep going. We must keep going. A chip, a chip, a chip. Keep going, a chip. If we stop, it will end. But if we keep going, it might last forever.
Well, I could tell you that it doesn't last forever because I've definitely reached the end, and I've been disappointing in my both myself and the fact that there are no chips left at the end. But that is a perfect way to describe that. I aim for similar descriptions in my football food of the week. And really, it's nice to know that the New York Times does some really good journalism out there.
I'm going to send you this link because I feel like this might be the only thing that you read for the next calendar year, but it might be worth it. It's a nice piece of writing about eating an entire bag of chips.
Hanging above your kitchen.
That doesn't sound like you're enabling me to be in the mood for chips at all when we talked about enabling, but hey, I guess so.
When I was 9 years old, I guess, I asked my dad if I could get a subscription to Sports Illustrated. And he said, yep, no question about it. Now, my dad was not an easy yes on anything, so I was kind of taken aback. I'm like, why was that so easy? I used to asked for so many things that said no, 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 no forever. And I said, what happened, Dad? Like, why was that so easy? And Papa Mendo said, I don't care what you read. I just want you to read. And he just felt like if you're into it and you're willing to read, that's a good thing. So I've always thought about that with humor as just finding what it is that might allow you to read and like it. And that's why I gave you the Jorge Posada book. And this might be it. Maybe beautiful poetic writing about eating potato chips and Doritos might be the thing that unlocks it.
I hate to just get into something that seems to be a constant topic. There's a difference. I do like to read. I read the newspaper daily. I just don't read books. There's a huge difference there. I get through the Daily News and Newsday on a daily basis. And it's not just the pictures, though, although I do love the nice photography. I read sports stuff every day. It's just when I open up a book, I feel like it's more of a job than it is an enjoyment. So there's a difference. But I will absolutely read poems on chip crunching. What are you kidding me? That's right up my alley.
Isn't that exactly a scene that Costanza says in one of like the pilot episodes of Seinfeld? Like, yeah, I like to read. I read the New York Post every day.
It's do you have any conceivable reason for getting up in the morning? He said, I like to get the daily news.
Let's get to your epic fail. We've been talking about this James Harden deal all day long, and our first caller out of the blocks this morning at like 6:10 a.m. Eastern time went real conspiracy theory tinfoil hat on us. Here it is, your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
What's his name? That one I'm talking about.
Kyrie Irving.
Nobody knows. Yeah, Kyrie Irving. He's had a mental problem, man. Nobody knows what's up. And you know what I believe, too, DA? Is that the mafia is involved in this.
Ooh. How
yes,
so?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. However, I'm going to switch gears now.
No, no, no. Go don't switch gears. I want this theory. How is the mafia involved?
I'm telling you, it's Brooklyn, New York, right?
Uh-huh.
Oh, Megatron, he's the bad guy. And believe me, I'm old enough to know what the hell's going on between Chicago and New York back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, it's just my theory. No biggie.
Well, what's the theory, though? How did the mafia pull this off? How do you think they have some influence?
For God's sakes, you know how quiet they can be.
Uh-huh.
And still get them done. Yeah, give me a break.
Okay, so you think the Brooklyn Mafia has a vested interest in the Brooklyn Nets and helped swing the trade by forcing Sean Marks to trade all those draft picks?
Oh, it could have been a nice discussion.
Okay, all right. So you think they might have intimidated Sean Marks into doing this?
And also, what's his name? Came from the... I got a strong back and a loud mouth. I'm losing my train of thought.
That's okay.
Is a three-pointer. That's all he could do.
James Harden?
Listen. No, not Harden. But, he had a lot. He's got a lot of momentum. Mm. He is running. How do you coach your guys like that?
Now, which guy are you talking about? Are you talking about Harden, Kevin Durant, or Kyrie Irving?
Kevin Durant.
Ah,
thank you. You just go against Detroit. Mm-hmm. Listen, you coach that guy, and he's telling the manager and the coach, Nash, is that his name?
Yes, Steve Nash.
Listen.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Remy in Ventura, California called in the 6 o'clock hour, which was 3 o'clock his time, so distinctly possible Remy was still up after a late night of doing something. And he didn't know Kyrie Irving's name, Kevin Durant's name, or Steve Nash's name. Strong take. And blamed it on the Brooklyn Mafia, who leaned on Sean Marks to give away all those draft picks.
The Mafia involved in this.
Ooh.
Who was the guy that only shoots three-pointers? I'm still lost on that.
Yeah, I don't know. Craig Hodges. I don't know who he's talking about there. No, that's who he was talking about with Kevin Durant, the guy that only shoots three-pointers, which means he's never watched a Kevin Durant game.
What a take.
Bogues, did you find the article that I just read from the New York Times about chip eating to be insightful, that it's a way to deny or to extend infinity?
Yeah, I'm going to have to read it in its entirety. I mean, it seems like a really deep thought, one I would never have while eating Doritos. But if there's a way to allow more Dorito eating because it takes you to a good place mentally or emotionally, I'm all for it.
I just sent it to you guys. You guys can read that and enjoy that. We've had a lot of people that sent us the new types of Lay's potato chips, right? Is there like Korean barbecue or something, Miraz, that I saw?
I saw Game Day Chili sent us to it.
Game Day Chili?
But this doesn't fit because this is not the time they released the new flavors. And I talked to my father and he said he didn't hear anything about new flavors. So I don't know where these are surfacing at.
We got to keep sniffing around. Got to keep sniffing. Tomorrow morning on the show, Billy White Shoes Johnson. We're doing the funky chicken aboard the mothership. So stay here tomorrow morning. Billy White Shoes Johnson, which is very cool. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Thanks to Pete the Body Bilotti on the Wheels of Steel. Thanks to Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA. And Andrew Bogish on your headlines. I'm DA. We'll see you tomorrow. The mothership disconnects.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.